Welcome to National Liberty Alliance Call. Today is June 7th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over our Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We left off last week. I didn't open up my Bible yet, so let me open it up. We're in the Gospel of John. I think we're on the last chapter, if I remember. John chapter 21. I'm pretty sure that is the last chapter. Okay, yep. John chapter 21 is the last chapter in the book of John. I can make the print a little bigger. Okay, I guess that'll do it good. Okay, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 21. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And on this wise showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter, and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth, and entered into a ship immediately. And that night they caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus saith unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. As soon then as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. Jesus saith unto them, Bring of the fish which ye have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus saith unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou, knowing that it was the Lord? Jesus then cometh, and taketh bread, and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples after that he was risen from the dead. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. Again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, When thou wast young, thou girdest thyself, and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, Follow me. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Then went this saying abroad among the brethren, that that disciple should not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him, He shall not die, but if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? This is the disciple which testifieth of these things, and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen. The end of the Gospel according to St. John.
Okay, first of all, let me get into the mic test, because I just changed my mics here. How am I coming through?
Sounds good.
You're sounding pretty good.
Good, thank you. All right, Jen, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
Yes, we have several questions, John. The first one is, it has kind of come up a number of times previously, but got nowhere. This pertains to a member of the COS, I believe, in Pennsylvania, and her son, and they've been on a call a number of times trying to get her land in Allegheny County changed to private. She's contacted Allegheny County officials over a year ago for that reason, and she was told to contact the Bureau of Land Management in Pennsylvania to have the land changed to private. Well, the land management told her to contact her local municipality, which is who told me to contact Allegheny County, so they just run her around in a circle. She did speak to this gentleman, David, from the county assessment office on the phone prior to sending him this email, and he told her, as stated in his email response, that the county does not have a code to classify property as private. I told him that that was the county's problem and they need to develop a code for it. Any comments? And they say they're not giving up, especially when you get a lame excuse about codes.
Well, the one thing that they did say is that they don't have a code, and that's exactly right. They don't have a code. They shouldn't have a code because it has nothing to do with a code, statutes, or anything of that nature. But it is the local municipality that is responsible for maintaining the tax scrolls and also making sure that they are have the right code. In this case, we want to remove the code. It probably is the case of ignorance. They don't know or understand. If you go through the county attorney and try to deal with this, of course they're going to battle you because they're the minions of the New World Order, and they know exactly what it means. It means that you'd be removed from the taxes. So it's an uphill battle. I don't know if anybody's ever accomplished it, but that is the process. It's the best process. But even if you go through another process, I forget what they call the other one. We've looked into it a little bit. I know Gerard has looked into it, and some people have spoken. But it's going to be the same problem. You're going to go through the whole exercise of redefining the land and spending the money to shoot the corners and make the description again, because I think that's part of the process, but I'm not too sure because I never went through that process to study it. Only if you're lucky you'll be able to get through the process in the way that you're just going to change the property to a private property. But it would be very rare that anyone can do that. And again, I'm not even too sure if anybody has at least recently done that. But again, I wouldn't worry too much about it because next year that's all going to be gone. After devolution, it has to go because it's unconstitutional. It's a slave tax. It takes away your property rights. The property is not yours if they can take it away. If you don't give them money every year and they can take it away, then you don't own that property. And that's the whole idea. We really, people who think they own the property are really leasing it out. They don't own that property. They just think they do. Again, smoke and mirrors, a facade, whatever you want to call it. But it is the local municipality that has the power and the authority to do it, and the only ones that can do it. And that would have to, well, I don't know that you'd have to get involved with the person who's actually the tax collector. That'd be a different thing. They just would be removed from their roles. All right, next question.
Okay, this person's been on, I believe, the last 2 weeks with a traffic issue and would like to continue seeking support for his case. After the commissioner refused to accept my documents, he scheduled me to return for a statutory trial on July 27th. He ordered me to appear in person, stating he will not approve me to appear via Zoom again. He said he would entertain my documents if I can get them in proper order, but refused to explain to me why they are not in proper order or how to get them in proper order. I do plan to seek support from the court's self-help clerk, but my questions are, can you define statutory trial and tell me what I might expect and what I should do to continue to exercise my rights and stand up to this bully?
Well, again, there is a process. We've spoken about it before. I think probably the person who's asking these questions, I think they've been asking some questions similar to this and trying to get an understanding. But if you go to our webpage, nationallibertyalliance.org, and highlight Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then come over to Court Forms and Process. And we do have some papers in here that you can work through to try to understand it. But what I don't understand is they use the word commissioner and not a judge. Well, they didn't explain that, did they? What do they mean by a commissioner?
Yeah, that's what he said. He didn't define it at all.
All right, well, basically the key thing is this, and this is extremely important, okay? When you come in to a court, let's say the traffic court, there are instructions and forms for traffic court. But this works on any code violation. It doesn't have to necessarily be a traffic court violation. Okay? But when you come in, you have to come in with an appearance ticket. Okay? It's extremely important to come in with an appearance ticket. So if they're asking you to make sure you got the proper papers and stuff, then this is the list of papers that you're going to want to come in with. They're just really, what would you say, again, blowing smoke and mirrors. They're making themselves look as if they're going to pay attention to you, listen to you, and maybe even rule in your direction, but that's not going to happen. They just want you to get in there, and then they're going to start demanding and requiring certain things. But anyway, you have to come in with an appearance ticket. You have to come in with a notice of motion, and you have to do a verified jurisdictional challenge. So those are the main papers, and you want to also put on top of that a file on demand. Now, we've spoken about this on numerous occasions, so we do have videos on this. So if you go to, today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, okay? And you come down, you'll start to see, Monday Night Open Forums for want. I think we went through this last week, restitution, solar flares, open forum. Should be coming here, Monday Night Open Forum traffic court follow-up. So there's one a little earlier than this. Let's see, back to the political process. Okay, here it is. No, it's the one below this. Okay, Monday Night Open Forum. This is done in April 1st, 2024. Town, Village, Traffic, and Administrative Courts. Again, it's the same paperwork working for any kind of a code violation within any town or village, and in most cases, any city courts. And so you'd want to watch this video right here. We'll start off with that. And then, of course, after that, we did the follow-up on it, which again was 4/29/24. Now we might do, we might go through a third part of this process that really moves you into the state court. And we might do this tonight. I don't know if we're going to have the time or not. It depends on how many people get into the queue, and there is one of the issues we want to discuss. So I know I've been talking about doing another follow-up on this. And again, if we don't do it this week, unless something comes up that's more important, we'll do that follow-up next week. But again, depending on how many people in the queue tonight, will give us a decision on whether we will even look at that tonight. So that's the key things that you want to do. Okay, next.
Okay.
One other thing. Move to state court. This is, I just posted this up here, okay? This one here, move to state court, and this is a redacted. I probably should just remove the word redacted, but in any event, it is redacted. It's a paper, it's my paper that I did use just recently. I had to move a traffic court into the state court, and I'll get into those details of what took place, what happened when we discussed this document. But the document is there to be looked at, read, and used if you need to use it. But you first of all, you know, you want to do the challenge and see how they react. But you have to get this paperwork in correctly because they do have their own statutes that try to make it a hard time for you. Not that the statutes hold any weight because it doesn't, but it's just another argument or a fight to make. And that is if you don't come in challenging the jurisdiction immediately, okay, first move, and again, you want to do an appearance ticket, a notice of motion, you're challenging the jurisdiction, and you want to serve your papers. But I get into all those details in those two video clips we did on a Monday. So it was April 1st and April 29th. Okay, next question.
Okay, this person lives in a small rural town in Northwest Florida in the least populated county of the state. Prior to the presidential election, the upcoming local election is for town elected officials. I'm doing research on some of the main candidates to familiarize myself. As a conservative, I'm seeking conservative candidates and come to discover that the three choices, the only three choices for judge are all Democrats. I cannot help but feel that this is by design since there are many conservatives in this area and many of the other categories of candidates are on the record as conservatives. Local voting is in August and it is very concerning that the judgeship will be occupied by the left. I am assuming that there is nothing that can be done and will be forced to vote for a Democrat with the left-wing agenda, like it or not. We will be going in the opposite direction. My town is small. This county with low education and income, essentially hardworking families and seniors. Old values exist here with families rooted in many leadership positions. Newcomer transplants are welcome, but locals don't listen to and do as they please as they have always done. A committee of safety would be difficult to start here due to struggling families and seniors like myself, unable to take on too much due to failing health. Any okay. help for this man?
All right. Well, first of all, thinking that a Republican judge is going to be better than a Democrat judge is really just an illusion. It's not going to make any difference. These people running for these positions are either bar attorneys or they are controlled by the bar. I've seen and talked with many judges that are not bar attorneys. They go to the judge school. I heard it's 2 weeks long. I heard it was a week long, whatever it is. As a matter of fact, Gerard and I talked about this, maybe looking into potentially going to the school, finding out when the next class is being given and going to it. I'm sure they'll have some raised eyebrows going in there, maybe. And I presume, you know, I don't know what kind of information they would have to have on us and what we would have to reveal in order to get into it. They may even deny us from going in there. And there is a book out. Let's see. I have this here. There is a book out there that you can download. I just started reading this. I had this book quite some time ago, and I just never gotten around to it, and I forgot I even had it. But someone sent me a copy of it and reminded me. It's called The Anti-Government Movement Guidebook, and it's put out by the National Center for State Courts. Very interesting. Okay, the court system themselves is putting this out. Okay, and basically it tells the judges how they deal with tyrants like us. This is it's probably a good book to read. I don't know if this is up on a website. I'll have to take a look at that. It may be on the website. If it is, I'll try to let you know next week. I'll make a note of that. And if not, I'll get it up there and make a note next week that it's there. But again, thinking that a Republican judge is going to be any better than a Democrat judge is just really a misunderstanding. The big problem is the fact that we don't know history, we don't understand common law, and we don't know how to have government by consent. For if we all knew those three things, if most people knew those three things, and remember, most people don't need to know this. You know, when you think about it and you ask the question, you know, how is it when they do all these polls that actually someone's going to actually vote for Biden? I mean, it's insane to even think that anybody in their right mind would even vote for him. And yet they have, and of course they cheated to get in anyway, but they have. And people still today, they will vote for him. And I remember years ago particularly, but even today, you know, I haven't spoken to many people about this recently, but people who just aren't paying attention and they're not interested in paying attention. And more often than not, they don't really watch much news. And if they get any news, they're going to get it from, you know, the enemy on the right or the enemy on the left anyway. So, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to vote for who they think they should. They believe the lie. They believe all this false stuff out there. So a lot of people that would be voting towards Biden is really people who aren't paying attention. Or they're extremists on the left, and they have something to gain by getting, you know, Biden or someone of his nature into the office, and really to control our representatives and even the Senate, which again they should be the state's representatives, not our representatives. That had to do with the 17th Amendment, which is null and void because it violates the Constitution. It changes the whole balance of power. I know we spoke about this once before, but in any event, that's the major problem. There's only one solution to this problem, only one. One person can't save the nation. 10 people can't save the nation, but it's going to take quite a few people to save the nation. But again, we don't need the majority. We only, you know, we have government, I think it was Jefferson who said this, but we don't have government by majority rule. We have government by the majority that participates. And it's a very few people that actually participates ultimately on the grassroots level. And they're usually controlled by either the right or the left because it's the two major parties which are totally for the purpose of destroying our nation. Again, the political process that's set up in America, the democracy that they call it, the purpose of all that is to destroy America. The Bar Association and the way they set the court system up, or how they changed the court system, again, it was total purpose for destroying America by destroying our justice system, and it demoralizes us, and that's the key. They have to demoralize the people in order to really get what they want, and they've been working very hard at that for a long, long time. I recall things and attitudes and when I was a kid or a young adult, and of today it's just so extreme, it's insane, you know, when you look at, the way it was and the way it should be, the way it was and the way it is, I mean. But even then, you know, understanding the way America really should be run requires an education. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So I don't think there's really going to be much to be gained in these court systems at this point other than building a record. If you want to build a record. Now, I did put a new page up. It's not going to be executed yet, but I'm going to share it tonight anyway. Let me think where I put this page. I don't think I put a link on it yet, so I have to remember. Okay, yeah, I did have a link, but I have to put some links in some other places. It's on the right side of the website. And people can peruse through this. We'll be putting this together soon. Stuck in an Abusive Court. Okay. Now, this is a page we had set up, and we were doing some paperwork for people. We were doing habeas corpuses. We were doing non-judicial foreclosures, whether it was tax or mortgage. It didn't matter. We worked with that. And those are the major ones that we worked with. But we did work with other cases. And really, the whole purpose of what we were doing, we did get a few wins. They were very rare and far and in between, and I mean just a few, maybe two or three here or there. I think we only had one or two habeas corpuses that actually appears to have obeyed to and responded to, and the person was let cut loose. So the possibility by doing a habeas corpus is there. It may also have a lot to do with the clout that we may have, at least in the minds of some of the judges when they see our paperwork, the way we've come together. Because their big attitude is, when you go up, is you're only one person complaining. You can't represent all the people. Get out of here. And they throw you out of court, you know. And I know Schultz has done a lot of, Robert Schultz with We the People have done a lot of cases concerning that, and they threw him out of court numerous times. I know another person and myself. So they just throw you out of court all the time. They don't want to hear it. All these denials, okay, is building a case. And the bottom line is, I do believe we're going to get satisfaction, we're going to get justice, people are going to be restored. And so anybody that wants to add a case, we're setting up a page for that, and I'm working with a group of other people. We're going to be going out to large groups of people, so we're probably going to get a lot of hits on this page. We're going to have a new page set up on a new site. It's only five pages. But I put the basic things on that site on this page. And basically, stuck in an abusive court is the question. And just read a little bit here. Natural law requires that for every injury, there must be a remedy. If you have been injured by the courts, we, the unified United States common law grand jury, will restore you. And that's the big point I was trying to make. You know, if you're going in with a couple of people or by yourself, they'll say you don't have standing. You're only one person. Everybody's being injured, so forget about it. Whatever that means. I mean, that's their strategy. I'll bet that strategy might even be in this anti-government movement guidebook. But what we did is, of course, forming the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We formed it in every single state of the union. We've visited every county. Maybe we've done two or three or four counties at a time throughout the states. And we organized a unified state common law grand jury in every single state. And then all those states came together and formed the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So they can't say to us, we don't have standing, in the sense that, oh, you're only one person, or you're only a small group of people in New York, in this county, or in this corner of the state, or whatever. No, we are nationwide. So I think we have a little more clout in their concern. But they have the fixers to come in. They're willing, I think, even to go to jail, and I'm sure they're paid very well for coming in and just breaking the law completely. But anyway, some of the examples of injuries, mortgage foreclosures, tax foreclosures, denial of due process, unlawful imprisonment, denial of habeas corpus, denial of your right to travel, denial of any unalienable right. And I'm just going to read this paragraph and then we're going to move on. He wrote here, we the people have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice, and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. The people have the unbridled right by law and in law to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of information indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. The will of the common law grand jury is the opening and manifestation of due process in a court of law. They are the sureties of peace that we find in the Magna Carta, and are ordained by the people through the Fifth Amendment, and thereby formally acknowledged as an unalienable right codified by the people themselves. Whereas insomuch as for the sake of the only one true God, and for restoring of our republic, and for the healing of the discord which has arisen between us and our servants, we, the unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, with all of our strength to observe, maintain, and cause to be observed the peace and privileges that we have granted to our servants and confirmed by the Constitution for the United States of America, in such wise, namely, that if any one of our servants shall have transgressed against anyone in any respect, or shall have broken some of the articles of peace or security, and our transgression, the people may come to us, showing us to us their injury, and they shall ask for a remedy, and we will amend the injustice. Okay, now this has been put together in preparation for the entail end of devolution. There's nothing we could just set the stage. We can just put all the evidence together, and with all the evidence that we've already gathered together in the sense of how they reacted and responded to what we've been doing for the last 14 years or so, 15 years, whatever it's been. With all the stuff that we put together, it proves conspiracy. It proves consistently that what they do in the federal courts or the state courts in California or New York or Texas or Pennsylvania, it's all the same process, same procedure. So we're in the middle of, and I was working a little bit on it today, and we've got a lot of work already done on this paper, which will be the final paper to go and remove all these people. And I do believe that every judge has to be removed. Now, the courts of justice can continue without judges. We don't need judges. Judges don't belong in a court of law anyway. You know, you have to have a magistrate. Now, all judges are magistrates, okay? But the magistrate, the purpose of the magistrate, he can't make any decisions in a court. The only thing they can do is act as a traffic cop, on the one hand, to make sure that the will of the jury is fulfilled, to pass the work and get the seal onto the decision of the jury, and pass it on to the sheriff for execution. I mean, and that's the total job. They can't deny certain, maybe evidence someone brings in. I mean, they constantly do that. They'll get rid of evidence, and they do it openly, without shame. They've done it with Trump. Anybody who's following the Trump trial, I mean, they just discard everything. Oh, you can't use that witness. No, that one can't come in. No, that evidence is not good. It just goes on and on and on. They've been doing it to us, we the people, for a very, very long time. As long as I've been in the courts, they've been doing it. And I've been in the courts now 15 years, roughly speaking. So, again, they do whatever they please. So the plan really is all about restitution at this point and getting rid of all of the judges. I'm thinking about how to write this paper and how to approach it. And we did talk last week. We did talk, let's see, was it last week or a couple of weeks ago? Let's see. Power and Authority of the Committee of Safety, Monday Night Open Forum. Oh, Rick Wawanta right here, Restoration of Our Republic. But we also talked about solar flares, EMPs, and restitution. And that was done on... was that May 27th, 2024. Anybody that wants to, they wasn't in for that one and they want to get more information on this, you can listen to that particular Monday program. And we did go through a little bit the Rick Wawanta. But anyway, we're going to be collecting affidavits. Now, we're not going to be filing those affidavits in the court. But what we are going to be doing is collecting them. And again, we've already, all the papers that we filed in the court, we're done with that. If you go here, Action Against the Judiciary, which is under federal court cases, and you click on Action Against the Judiciary, you can read about the extraordinary action that we filed. and all of the papers and all of the filings and all of the cases and all of the memorandums and all of the indictments. I mean, we've done a lot of indictments in here. And you can go through all this. This is our case that we've been building for many years now. And we're going to add to this all affidavits. And people should expect to be restored. If you've lost your home to a non-judicial foreclosure, and trust me, every foreclosure in America is a non-judicial foreclosure. Whether they have a non-judicial foreclosure code or not, or statute, whatever, it does not matter. It's the same process and procedure. They do it everywhere. And it's a criminal act. So if you lost your home to a mortgage foreclosure or to a tax foreclosure, you can fill out an affidavit. Let me get to that page here. And again, we have a special site we're setting up, but I also figured today I put this on our page, so we do have a place where people can find this by being on our site and clicking on it, you know, if you're stuck in an abusive court. But we will be going out to a lot of people, and we should get a lot of responses. If you've been unlawfully imprisoned, anybody that was imprisoned through IRS, and because of tax reasons, and usually they like to give out 6 years, but I guess some people get less than that from time to time. But 6 years, I heard, is like the standard. You know, they're going to go out after you. And so if you've been in prison for that, you need to be restored. You've been injured. For every injury, there must be a remedy. It's not nice to just have a remedy. You know, it'd be a nice thing to have. No, for every injury, there must be a remedy. End of subject. Nothing to talk about, and we're going to require it, and we're going to declare it. And there'll be plenty of money to be able to deal with all these problems. And again, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago when we went through the writ quo warranto. You know, because we're not talking, these people are not valued as far as their, you know, their network, their corporations, and all the things that they have, properties, liquidity, gold, silver, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You put it all together, we're not talking millions, we're not talking billions, we're not talking trillions, we're talking, at bare minimum, quadrillions. And that money, ultimately all those things, it'll be taken away from them. The government can't keep it, they don't own it. The people, they stole it from the people, it's got to go back. Like Trump said, you know, if the diamond thief gets caught robbing the diamond store and he gets caught, got to give the diamonds back. Well, we want our money back. We want our liberty back. We want restitution, and so that's what we're putting together. We do believe that we have military backing behind us. There is a military clout behind us, and we'll be sending our paperwork when devolution is at a certain point, towards the end. After the arrests start to takes place. We know that there's going to be 10 days of darkness, and I guess that's what they're estimating. It's going to take 10 days to really arrest all these people and take down, all these people that might be in the streets. There's going to be a lot of problems in the streets. And by the way, if people aren't prepared for that, everybody should be ready to be able to have at least a month's worth of food and supplies and everything you're going to need for at least a month, bare minimum. Couple of months is better, but if you get at least a month, at least you can get through the first part of it, because it may be hard to get things during that time period. So people should be ready for that. People can read through this. I did put a, if you read through this page here, we've got a couple of videos here. Matter of fact, the Monday video I was talking about, the writ quo warranto and restoration of the Republic, that video is on this page. But then you'll be able to download a copy of the affidavit format. Let me just open that up. Basically, this is it. So you want to just fill this out. And it's very simple. You know, we're not looking for a copy of the court case. If you have a court case, actually, and some people are injured and don't have a court case, get out or whatever the problem may be, they could still file papers here. If you do have a court case, we just need the name of the court, the judge's name, and the address, and, of course, the case number. That's for reference. But what we really need is the affidavit. And the affidavit, of course, must be sworn to, so by a notary. And it has to be you know, you have to save that affidavit, put it in a safe place, but you have to send us a copy. You could do that electronically. We're setting up an email. I'm not going to do fax. It's just going to be emails. And right now it's going to be on this page. It's affidavit@restoregovernmentbyconsent.org. On the other page that we're setting up on another site, it might be something else, affidavit@something else. One of the individuals I'm working with. And by the way, Aldo, if you're in the room, raise your hand and let me know. And maybe someone can kind of see where he's at. And when the time comes, maybe unmute him. Because he may have some questions. He's setting this stuff up with me. So anyway, that's available for that. We're going to start collecting immediately. And hopefully that website will be up, hopefully within the week. You know, I don't know how busy those people are, but we'll find out. So let me see what else I might want to say in this. Well, I guess that's about it. We're looking for restitution, and we're looking for military backing. We do believe we have it now, and we do believe that we're going to get this out to hundreds of thousands of people, potentially in the millions, of course. We're looking for critical mass. If we get this out to 1 million people, I do believe we're going to hit critical mass. Critical mass, meaning enough people to join into NLA and start building committees of safety to be able to take the entire nation back. You know, people don't realize how much liberty that has been stolen from them, liberties that they haven't even thought about. But the basic liberties that we do think about, we're starting to see those erode, you know, free speech, and having a weapon, and so on. Okay. Any other questions on that, by the way? Any other questions left?
No, that was it for tonight, John.
Okay. All right. Let me see. Okay, Aldo, if you're here, maybe you can get into the queue. *6 and 1 if you're on the phone, and if you are on an app or something, there should be a button to be able to enter the queue. And we'll try to focus in on some questions that you and some of the people you're working with might have. If you're here tonight, I don't know. Okay, last week we did talk a little bit about... last week we did talk a little bit about the Bible removed from the school, and the name of the case is Ingalls versus Vitale, and I did find it on the website. If you come down under Education Starts Here, you go to Law and come over to Memorandum of Law. Okay, now under these memorandums of law, you'll find the case concerning the Bible in the in school. And this is it, Bible in the School, Ingalls versus Vitale. This was in 1963, and I remember this when this happened because I went to a parochial school, and right across the street from us was a state school, a public school. And when that happened, a lot of parents sent their children over for religious instructions over to our school once a week. And, you know, I was pretty young at the time, so let me see, I was 11 years old. So, but I do remember it very clearly. But anyway, the question was asked, about this Bible in this law. How is this to be? Where is it in the law? How is it that our nation, when our nation was being constructed, that they made that the centerpiece of education? So I'm just going to read a couple of these pages. Clearly I can't read them all, there's 16 pages. But the first few pages, 3 or 4 pages, is pretty powerful. Actually, the whole document is very powerful. But I'm just going to read a few pages. And then we'll go into Q&A. Okay, and this is about where the Supreme Court forbidden the free exercise of religion in violation of the First Amendment. The First Amendment states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or forbidding the free exercise thereof. Our founders who wrote the First Amendment prayed together and built America under 8 ancient principles derived from the Bible. Our courts are founded upon common law, which is founded upon the Bible. Our founders believed that liberty is a blessing from God, founded in the Bible. They believe that the founding of America was by the providence of God. They established a court of law and a court of equity founded upon biblical principles. A court of equity in a common law republic such as ours requires that its statutes, codes, and regulations be legislated in harmony with the common law, and its court's procedures be governed by its common law rules. Black's Law Dictionary defines a court as the person and suit of the sovereign, that's the king. The place where the sovereign, the king, that's we the people, we're the kings, sojourn with his retal retinue, and that's his loyal noble servants or the people that are supporting him, wherever that may be. A court of the sovereign created by the sovereign directly or indirectly under his authority, consisting of one or more officers established and maintained for the purpose of the hearing and determining issues of law and fact regarding legal rights and alleged violations thereof, and of applying the sanctions of the law authorized to exercise its powers in the course of law at times and places previously determined by lawful authority. Black's Law Dictionary defines a court's bench as a seat of judgment or tribunal for the administration of justice, the seat occupied by judges in courts. The term indicating originally the seat of the judges came to denote the body of the judges taken collectively and also the tribunal, which is the jury itself, as the king's bench. Hang on 1 second, because my dog is whining. She just wants to go out. I gotta open the door. Okay, sorry. Back. Okay, the king of our common law court is Jesus Christ, also known as Emmanuel, being interpreted as God with us. Matthew 1:23. Behold, a virgin shall be with a child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Isaiah, Old Testament, Prophecy, chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. And his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment, and with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. We read in John chapter 1, verse 6 and 10 through 14, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten Son of the Father, full of grace and truth. So Jesus Christ is the incarnation of God, and there could be no doubt that most of our founders knew Jesus Christ, and through his Word were in all likelihood sons of God, well, many of them anyway. And they and many other sons were blessed with the courts of justice and the blessings of liberty. Therefore, if we refuse to hold up the king of our court in our courts and our schools, our common law republic will be lost along with God's blessings of liberty. Our founding fathers were adamant about this. Let's see why. At the founding of our national republic, the land of America was looked upon by majority as representing a new Jerusalem and or a city upon a hill, and or the new Israel, drawing from 2 Samuel 7:10, where God said, Moreover, I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own and move no more. The Declaration of Independence, we declared separation and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitles us. U.S. Constitution. Government is to secure the blessings of liberty. Pledge of Allegiance. We are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Article 3, Section 2. America's judicial system is under common law. The Liberty Bell in Philadelphia proclaims Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. The inclusion of prayer before the opening of each session of both House and Senate traces its origins back to the colonial periods. Since then, all sessions of the Senate have, I wonder how much longer this is going to go, have been opened with prayer, strongly affirming the Senate's faith in God as sovereign, Lord of our nation. The role of the chaplain as a spiritual advisor and counselor has expanded over the years from a part-time position to a full-time job as one of the officers in the Senate. By convention, incoming presidents, like all elected officials, raise their right hand and place their left on the Bible while taking the oath of office. In 1789, George Washington took the oath of office with an altar Bible borrowed from St. John's Church. An oath is a solemn appeal to God, permitted on fitted occasions. Deuteronomy 6:13, Jeremiah 4:2, in various forms, Genesis 16:5, 2 Samuel 12:5, Ruth 1:15, Hosea 4:15, Romans 1:9, and taken in different ways, Genesis 14:22, 24:2, and 2 Chronicles 6:22. You know, a lot of people don't think that they can take an oath, because the Bible does talk about let your conversations and communications be yea and nay, and not swear this and swear that. But there are appropriate places, and the Bible talks about that, and a court of law would be one of them. The Bible is our common law book, without which there is no common law. The jury is the king's bench, and it is to judge according to the king's justice, and the name of that king is Jesus Christ. And if the people are going to judge according to the precepts of the God's Son and be obliged in conscience to temperance, frugality, and industry, to justice, kindness, and charity towards our fellow men, and to piety, love, and reverence toward Almighty God, we must know Him. And we know Him through His Word, the Bible. The Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God. That we would live under His law and thereby receive His blessings of liberty. And that includes everybody, both believers and non-believers. Therefore, we must teach every child His precepts through the gospel. And for that reason, the Bible should be returned to our schools, as was the will of our founding fathers, when in 1789, Congress and President George Washington passed and signed into the law of the United States annotated code, Article 3, which states, religion, morality, and knowledge being a necessity or necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. George Washington said, it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to employ His protection and favor. Benjamin Rush, signer of the Declaration of Independence, said, the great enemy of the salvation of man, in my opinion, never invented a more effective means of limiting Christianity from the world than by persuading mankind that it was improper to read the Bible in schools. Clearly, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, clearly, our founders who wrote the First Amendment believed that the First Amendment was not violated by prayer and the Bible in schools, in Congress, and in private life, in opposition to our founders' resolve concerning America's acknowledgement of our Creator. The bar controlled the United States Supreme Court in the case of Ingalls versus Vitale with no constitutional authority. And while ignoring Congress's first act in 1789, the United States annotated code Article 3 and ruled that school-sponsored prayer in public schools violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And certainly it did not, because, again, religions, nobody's holding up a religion like to become Protestant. You got to be a Catholic, you got to be a Presbyterian, you got to be Episcopalian, or you got to be whatever name you can think of. No, it has nothing to do with that kind of a thing. It's God's word, period. For 174 years, it was legal and constitutionally protected that the Bible was to be taught in American schools, and it is still the common law today. The following freedoms were also legal in our schools for over 174 years. Invocations and benedictions, prayer at athletic events, and teacher-led prayer, and now they're all illegal under the false pretense of separation of church and state. With this unlawful decision by the United States Supreme Court, keeping in mind the fact that even Congress can make no law concerning the free exercise, let us read the First Amendment again. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or the free exercise, or forbidding the free exercise thereof. Let me see what page we're on. Okay, we're going to come to an end on this page, I think. The Bar Control Supreme Court rule violated the First Amendment by legislating from the bench a contradictive law. The Bible is the foundation of American law. It is the history of the king of our court. It's the spring of morality and justice. It is the haven of our unalienable rights. It is the law of the land. It reveals who we are as a people. It makes us moral and just people. And it is now up to the people, through their county committees of safety, to reinstate the teachings of our heritage and reinstate the king of our courts and justice in schools. For more than 58 years after the Bar Control Supreme Court issued its repugnant landmarking rule striking down school-sponsored prayer and Bible reading, Americans continue to fight over the place of religion in public schools. Questions about religion in the classroom no longer make quite as many headlines as they once did, but the issue remains an important battleground in the broader conflict over the Bible's role in public life. The enemy of a natural law republic and many who have fallen prey to their false premises fear the teaching of the incarnation because of all the evil acts of apostate churches perpetrated upon the religious who were indoctrinated under these false gospels of hate, torture, division, and the suppression of freedom of the people to think and believe whatever they wish, whereas God's children promote justice, liberty, and love, as we read in John chapter 13, verse 34 and 35, where Jesus said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Okay, I'm going to end it there. There's quite a bit more to this paper. Like I said, it's 16 pages. I think what we've read alone is pretty powerful and makes the position clear. Either we're going to have common law or we're not. There's only two choices. We can either have common law, which is the law of God, which we find in the Bible, or we can have the law of man, which is what we have now. And it's going to get a lot worse if we continue down that path, because it's the path of Babylon. It brings us to Babylonian law, because that's what law we have. It's also referred to as municipality law, or Roman law, or Justinian law. All the same thing, just a different name. You know, same stuff. Control the slaves, keep them ignorant, keep them controlled, tax them, and don't let them learn about liberty. Don't let them learn about the Bible. Don't let them learn about anything that our founding fathers have believed and taught and required. Okay, so anyway, I'll leave that aside. Again, you can find this paper under Education Starts Here. You come down to Law, and then Memorandums of Law, and you'll find it in here. There's quite a few good memorandums in here, and if you're doing court cases, you can use a lot of these memorandums, and I've written quite a few more than this. But in any event, that's where we're at with that. Okay, what we're going to do is, I see we have some people in the queue. So anybody wants to get into the queue, we have three people in there right now. Star 6 and a 1 and you get on the phone, or if you have an app, there should be a button there somewhere saying get into the queue. And if we exhaust the people in the queue, Well, then maybe I'll go if we have the time. We'll look at another paper for moving your court case from the municipality courts, which would be the town courts, the village courts, and even the most city courts. And that's what where you're really going to get to, because they're not going to commit. And you're going to be beaten up in the state court also, probably. I'm going to find that out soon anyway, because I'm in the state court now before on this issue. And we'll see how things go. But the next move for me is to move it into the federal court for denial of due process, because that's what it'll be, a denial of due process. Because that's what they're going to try to do, is deny me my due process, because they don't want my case to be heard. They don't want my case to be on the record. So, okay, so let's take our first caller here. Mike, you got the mic. What's your first name? Well, what's your state? It looks like you are, well, let me see. It should be unmuted. Let's try this. Okay, you're unmuted now, Mike. What state?
Hello, John. It's Mike, of course, and California is my state.
How you doing? California.
I had a question on moving from state court to federal court. I went down to do a dry run, and the federal court told me that I can't move a criminal court case into federal court. Now, is that true? Because looking at your paperwork, I discern that is untrue.
It is, again, that they can't move the – say it again.
I've got a criminal complaint.
What did they say?
Oh, they said that I cannot move a criminal case from state court to federal court. They can only do civil cases.
Well, that's not true, because they have the job. They can make final decisions in law. That's the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And the only thing you could do to move it is really to deal with if you're getting a denial of due process, and you are, if you know how to really interpret what's going on.
That is what I was filing.
So then you have
spoke to you right before. So
you can ignore them. You can go file your papers, move it to federal court for cause, but only stick to the constitutional thing. Nothing else matters. Nothing else. And when you're being denied due process, you're not going to get into details, and you're not going to respond to anything they may say concerning the case when you're trying to move it to court, because they don't understand what you're doing anyway.
Right.
But the thing is when you're in there, you're only sticking on the fact that you were denied due process. And since you're being denied due process and they cannot give you due process, you're demanding that the court case cease and desist. That's the main thing. Now,
okay, but is it
money also? So, but you know, it might be wise just to chase the conclusion that you're looking for, especially in a criminal case. Don't go for money.
Okay.
My suggestion, anyway.
Okay. Now, I'm still moving the case, though, right? Or am I just filing
civil? You're only moving. The only thing you're not moving a case. The only thing you're moving is the denial of your due process. Remember, it could be a murder case. They don't need to know about that in the federal court. You don't need to bring it up. I mean, they may say, "Hey, this guy's being convicted of murder." You can't. It doesn't matter what they say. That's irrelevant. What you're discussing and arguing is the law, which is due process, which is the fundamental thing of all things, the right to be able to defend yourself, the right to be able to do what you have to do, quiz people, examine the evidence, respond to the evidence, and do all those things, okay, in a court of law, which is common law, which you're not in because they don't open common laws, in common law, and by your peers. By a jury of your peers, okay, a fully informed jury of your peers. Those are the positions and points you need to make out. Now, you're probably not going to win in that, but you can make the case, and it could be resurrected, and you can file it with us also. And you can file any case with us on the page that I told you, and eventually we'll have the website up, and we'll give you the different bureaus for that, too, if you want to know about it. But in any event, that's the process, that's what we're doing.
Okay. Now, how do I shut down my state court if I can't move my state case if I can't move the case to federal court?
Once they've denied you due process and you're challenging due process in a court of law in the federal level, everything has to stop. And if they continue to move on, you need to talk to the judge about that and say, hey, look, until this is decided, these people can't continue, and they're still assaulting me. Now, remember, you know, there is a possibility, very, very slim, but there's a possibility of winning. You know, you'll take it into the federal court, then you'll take it up to the appellate court, then you'll move it up to the United States Supreme Court. It is a very important issue. It's the issue of due process. They're going to want to have to hear that. And with the Supreme Court justices that we have now, at least most of them, you have a good chance of winning the case. I do believe their arm has been twisted by the military to start being obedient to the law, doing the right thing. And again, we've been informed that our paperwork, the writ cor wanto, and if you haven't read that, you're going to want to read our writ cor wanto. But they've used that as the premise of the fact that the people have spoken. And we wrote a very powerful paper, so they're using it and leveraging it against them as we understand it. And again, we spoke about that on a couple of weeks ago on our Monday night program.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now if I understand you correctly, I'm not going to move my criminal case from state court to federal court. I file a civil denial of due process.
No. There's an example here. I have it. You can find it under, and if you're taking the course, are you taking the course?
I am. I'm taking the course, and I did actually use your paperwork, but when I got down to the court, they said, no, we don't do that. You can only file a civil case. You can't move.
No. When you go there, you're asking them for approval. Forget them. You file your case in the federal court and serve them. That's what you do. You don't ask them anything. You don't have to do any of those things. No notice of motion. This is a whole case on its own from the standpoint that that case is in violation of the law, and you're bringing the violation as a constitutional issue, which is a denial of due process. They can't give me justice here.
Okay.
That's the point. So you have to come from that perspective. You have to understand the perspective that we're talking about in order to defend it.
Okay. Now, how do I use that federal case to shut down my state case? Because they've already set a trial date for me. Or do I still have to go through the motions?
No. Once the papers are filed, that's it. Then they can't go. By filing it in the federal court and serving it on them, freezes it all up.
Okay.
And if they continue to move and assault you, okay, then from that standpoint, you would make a point to the judge on this, and the judge would then come in, you'll have to write a paper for that and move the judge to tell them to cease and desist. They have to stop while we're here because we're making a decision on due process, and I'm not getting it due process in the court.
Okay, and so it doesn't matter.
Is involved with this.
Uh-huh.
Okay. How far into the course are you at this point?
I filed paperwork, and based on your paperwork.
No. How far into the course, court access in the common law court?
How far am I into the course? I've gone through the entire thing. I'm ready to run through it again.
Now from this point on, we got all these videos that we have is also an audio, and since you've seen the video and you start playing the audio, put it in your background wherever you're at, in your car driving around, when you're doing something mindless, and you can listen to these things. If you're relaxing, you put on these tapes, and you go through it over and over. That's how I studied the numerous courses that I have taken, where you get the audio. And you just listen to it over and over and over again, it'll start to click. But you have to understand all the principles involved here. There are lots of principles. How due process works to begin with. Okay, you want to understand that whole, and that's a pretty simple process when you really look at it. We do explain it, I think, pretty simply. But again, the mindsets have to be on the principles of common law.
I see. Okay. And you think, let me ask you, you may not know this, I'm out in California. Does something like this normally take a few months to get into court, or would you have any idea?
I just heard of a case that was finally won. It should have been won on the trial level, but they're evil. And all the way up the whole system, they were evil until finally the decision came down from the Supreme Court. This case was valid. This guy was right, and he got his justice. But it took 5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's not justice. What the heck's wrong with these people?
Yeah.
But why is it that way? Why? Everything they stretch out for numerous reasons and create a lot of problems in the process. But
yeah, delayed justice is no justice.
Right. I mean, just think about it, you know. You go to the Supreme Court, if you hire a lawyer, you know, you're going up to the Supreme Court, it's going to cost you $50,000, $100,000, you know. Just going to court every time they write a paper, every time they go to a hearing. I mean, they just hit you over and over and over again. I mean, who can afford justice? That's not just.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, and even doing it on my own, you know, it's the time off from work I have to take to go to the courthouse, to schedule the stuff, to study, to, yeah.
Anybody who goes to court, especially on a criminal charge, but even on civil charges, anybody who goes to court and doesn't run their own case, well, you're just giving yourself over to the devil, because they already know who's going to win the case from the beginning. The fix is already in.
Well, once you enter a plea, you've submitted yourself to their jurisdiction.
At that point, you're stuck in.
You've lost, no matter whether they tell you you won or, you know, I mean, it's just a matter of how much you're going to pay.
And they will make it a point to, because they do have, they've written statutes for this, okay? And they will make it a point that if you don't follow a certain process, and let me open up to the page that I wanted to get to. Matter of fact, let me go to Court Access and the Common Law. Let's see, the Table of Contents. Okay, this is the course's Table of Contents. Let me see. Where we find the Supreme Court decision codes, conference states, pleadings, cause of action, affidavits, motions. Should be moved for a cause in here. Forms and instructions, habeas corpus. Move for cause. Okay, right here. Okay, and I don't know if I updated this yet or not. Let me go to the page I know I updated, and I'll have to go through here to make sure I update it and put some more information in here. But let's go over to Education Starts here. This is open to anybody to see. And you come down to...
Court Forms.
Wait, where am I at? I'm in the wrong place. Here, Law, Court Forms, and Process, yeah. Okay, now we come down to... Okay, instructions, forms, a traffic court. Okay, when you go into a court, okay, in every case you should do this. You're setting the stage, okay, especially if you plan on challenging the jurisdiction. You've got to do it right up front. So you want to make sure you have an appearance ticket, okay? An appearance ticket is just a notice of a special appearance, okay? And it says, please take note that your name hereby appears in the above entitled commercial code violation by the undersigned who is appearing on his own behalf in this commercial traffic court complaint by special appearance. What? Mm-hmm. Why? For the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the court. All papers in this action is to be addressed to the address below, so on and so forth. Okay, mm-hmm. So this is an important paper. You're coming in by, did you file a special appearance notice?
I did not. I wasn't aware of that. However, I did declare it was a special appearance.
Well, that's key. That's an important point. So now he wants everything in order. Give him everything in order. Give him your notice of special appearance through this paper, an appearance ticket. Okay, that's one paper you want to make sure it's in there. And again, you know, I did this on traffic. You could do this on any kind of a code violation. Okay, mm-hmm. So you got the appearance ticket. The first order of business, a notice of motion. The motion is the jurisdictional challenge in that court. Okay? And one of two things should take place in that court. Okay? Either that judge acknowledges that you, from your paperwork, that you're right, I don't have jurisdiction, case dismissed. Okay? Mm-hmm. Probably not going to happen, but it could. Second thing that should happen is that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. And your point, you know, to the judge is you already believe you have jurisdiction, so there's a conflict here. I need another judge in here to take a look at this. So there should be another judge come in, take a look, and should rule right. And if they don't rule right, then you move it to state court, of course. Okay, you move it to state court and for your denial of due process. The denial of due process begins right there with the jurisdictional challenge. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided.
All right. Now, if I'm already in state court, in my case I was, the next place to go is federal, correct?
That's right, federal court.
Okay. All right.
I recently added the state, moved it to the state. It gives you another bite at the apple. It gives you a couple of bites at the apple because you've got the state court to move it, and if the judge doesn't do the right thing and make the decision accordingly to law, then you go through the appeal and the appellate. So you've got two steps to go there. Then you can move it into the federal court for cause, and then you got another appeal, and then you got the U.S. Supreme Court. So you can hit like six or seven different courts working on the same thing. That stretches it out also.
Uh-huh. Is it better to appeal to the next court rather than moving it to federal right away? Or does it, I mean, is it just a hit and miss, you know, one's good, one, you know? What would you advise in that?
Well, in the state court, I'd go right into the federal court.
Okay. Yeah, that was my feeling also, so I'm glad you concur with that.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Yeah, I was actually in court this morning. The judge was, I mean, he asked me to speak. He was very accommodating, but I knew his decision, you know, and so did he before he ever listened to anything I had to say. And then he said, well, this court has jurisdiction. I said, I'm only here to talk about jurisdiction when he asked about the trial. So he said, well, you're not going to talk about anything else. We'll just go ahead and set the trial date for you since you have no input. And they set the trial date for me and basically told me to get lost. Mm-hmm. You know, in a nice way, of course.
Is this a weapons charge? I don't remember.
Yeah. This is concealed.
And again, you got the Supreme Court working with you on that, you know? And that's another thing they're charging you. When you go in, you've got a couple of causes. Not only a cause of due process, you've got a cause of the fact that they're denying you your right to have a weapon. And the Supreme Court just ruled on that not even a year ago.
I looked at that. Now, the impression I got was that they ruled that the states cannot deny a concealed carry permit, which I was not denied one. I never asked for one.
The case was about that, but yes. But I think it went further than that. I haven't read the case,
okay.
So I don't even have a copy of the case yet.
I'll have to run through it again.
If you have a PDF copy of the actual case, I don't need to.
Yeah.
Maybe you could just drop it into us through mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll put it.
Okay, will do.
Okay.
All righty. Well, as always, I appreciate your time, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
Okay, we'll go to our next caller. Let's see if we can get this thing working now. It's a 586 number. I don't know why it's not working. Let's try it again. There it is. It should be open now. Okay, you got the mic. Let's see that. 586 number. First name and state. Uh, 3321, you got the mic.
Phone can you hear me?
I can hear you now. First name and state.
Okay, perfect. Hi, good evening. This is Bridget. I'm from Michigan, and I attended my second Committee of Safety meeting tonight.
Okay.
We're working towards that. I'm been in and learning. But I'm also very curious on the process of detaching from the corporate United States and emancipating myself. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that process of the separation and any consequences that could potentially come from that.
Well, that whole process is statutorily set up. They set that up. And the whole thing is a trap. It's worthless. It doesn't do anything. Look, the whole thing was treason. I'm working on the paper to go into the against the federal judiciary to dismiss them. And again, when that gets filed is another thing. But I'm probably going to release it prematurely, you know, for people to read and take a look at it and so on, and maybe comment on it and see how things go. But in any event, once I put that paper together, I think that paper might help in a lot of ways to understand the problem that, as far as the problem between the U.S. Inc. and the United States of America, okay? And the whole thing is a fraud. It was an act of treason, okay? And so to get involved with that, all you're doing is alerting them and putting yourself on a list to begin with, saying, here I am, I'm really a big problem to you guys, and I want that special thing that you're not going to get it anyway, you think you are. And it doesn't do anything for you. I mean, what do you do once you get it? You walk into court, click your heels a couple of times, and you're going to be transported into some court of justice somewhere? That's not going to happen.
No. What I understand, the people that are pursuing this are claiming they no longer have to pay taxes.
Key word here, claiming. Because believe me, when the IRS comes down on them, they better be able to defend themselves. They need to understand how to deal with that problem. And it cannot be statutory, okay? You can use their statute to show, because they never wrote it up in a way that really that works for them. You know, they have statutes that require you to be a taxpayer. But as you go down that rabbit hole, they define the taxpayer, and you're not a taxpayer. Okay, so that's how you battle something like that with the IRS. But I can assure you, let me tell you, they may think they're getting away from the IRS. If people say, oh, I got this one, it's on the IRS. Let me tell you, the IRS takes a long time before they come out after you. They build a case. Mm-hmm. They want to get you to really, not participate with them. They want to send a letter, and they want you to respond to it. And that's all evidence being built up, to see, because your acquiescence. Okay, when you don't answer them, you're acquiescing to them. And in that part of the process, they're building that case. You acquiesced. You agreed. You agreed here. You agreed there. You agreed here. You agreed there. You see, and that they're building a case. You get it. You got to neutralize every letter that comes in. They think that they got something going. Trust me, they don't. And there are a lot of people out there saying they have success and they haven't had success. They're lying. It's that simple.
That is true.
But it is dangerous, extremely dangerous, because you're saying, I'm your biggest problem, U.S. Inc., and they're going to put you on that biggest problem list. So I wouldn't do it. Unfortunately, I did start out with that many years ago. But I never pushed.
Yeah, and that's that paperwork where you denounce that you...
Right, you file a...
You're a sovereign citizen under God.
The declaration. And I use my own language.
Right.
But I filed a declaration with the county. Thankfully, it really hasn't gotten anywhere. We just filed in the county, and I never pushed it along anywhere. I certainly didn't go out and get rid of my license and my Social Security. I didn't make notice to the IRS. I didn't do any of those things. And I'm thankful that I didn't, because you're only making yourself a mark. That's all you're doing. And remember, when you give up your citizenship, people don't understand this, okay? Look, I am a citizen of the United States. That's what I am. I am that. And the United States Constitution uses the word citizen 7 times, okay? I'm a citizen of the United States of America, particularly New York, because that's where I live. I'm a citizen of New York. But I have all the rights of a citizen of New Jersey as I'm traveling through New Jersey, of Pennsylvania, as I travel through Pennsylvania or stop in there. I have all the rights, all of the, anything anybody could do in that state, I can do. I can file a court case. I can do whatever I want, because I'm a citizen of all of the states ultimately. And then, of course, you choose one to live, or you choose in a couple of them. Who knows? But the thing is, though, if you got rid of your citizenship, and remember, anybody that comes into this nation, into the country here, this nation, in order to become a citizen, it's the job of the federal government to give citizenship out and make you a citizen of the United States, and you go out and choose where you want to live. So you got to understand that point. And the thing is if you got rid of your citizenship, in reality, they can deport you.
So when you sign... When you all capital letters on your Social Security number, and you fill out voluntarily your W-9 and all the different paperwork that you file, that you agree to pay taxes, which they say you're volunteering to pay those taxes, you cannot separate from that.
You agreed, but, again, most people, there's quite a few people, it's a very large number, I'll say a third, but I think it's bigger than that, people don't file taxes. Okay, so just by not getting involved, but the problem is if you're working for someone, they want to push you towards that process.
Right.
And it becomes a problem.
Or they tell you it's required.
Yeah, of course, yes. And it's them that's required, because I do know somebody who was in business and took a stance and didn't collect taxes off the people that was working for him and didn't file, didn't get involved with any of that stuff. And he had a position. There was some people who put out a plan for this. But the plan failed, okay? And he lost his shirt.
Okay.
He almost went to prison, but he didn't go to prison. But he was destroyed, financially destroyed. And they beat him up pretty bad. But the thing is, there are ways to defeat these people in word. Let me put it this way. If you understand how to deal with these people and you understand their law in this area, which is USC 26, okay, if you understand the principal parts of USC 26 that would be on your side, and you make that declaration and lay it out in your court case, they don't want that in court. And they certainly don't want to win in court. So they'll try to deal with you. I received a release of lien from them, from my papers that I filed. I received a release of lien. I received an apology letter, and I was told in that letter that I wasn't required to pay income tax. So they don't want that in court. So when I bailed out of that court, because that agreement was made behind the scenes, so I said, okay, fine. So I dropped everything. I was in court for another case, okay, and they used my case against me, okay. I was with someone else in this case. But they used that case, my case, against this case as if it was won when it wasn't won, okay. But they filed it as being won, okay, in the system. So, again, these people are that evil. That's what they do.
Yeah.
But the thing is, look, don't make waves if you don't have to. Little battles might be best just to move on. If you want to really learn and test out the whole system, do it in the code violation courts, down in the village and town courts. That's where you want to learn to do things and talk with the judge and make your position and your argument, okay, so on and so forth.
Yeah, because there's another component of that separation from the corporation, and that is that we don't technically own anything. We as citizens, so to speak, being owned by the corporation, because we signed, our parents signed that with our social security number when we became capitalized, that technically we think we own our home, even when it's, when it's paid off, or the car when it's paid off, and technically we don't. They own it.
Is that all fraud?
Pardon?
Is that fraud, all of that? Is that all fraud? Have they committed fraud against you by executing those things against you?
I don't know. That's my question.
Well, the answer is yes. That's the point. Yeah, that's the.
Logically, it makes sense, but I don't know if legally it does.
Well, again, if you understood the common law, you really have to dig into the common law. As Jefferson
said.
Okay,
that's common law. Okay.
If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So people need to realize that. Okay? So you have to know the basic law. Now, common law is common sense. You can't argue against common sense, but that's what common law is. The law is common sense, that which is just and right. That's what it's all about, okay? Now, with that being said, and you understand that position, then all these statutes are irrelevant to you. They have nothing to do with you, okay? All statutes are written, if you go into, for instance, the federal level, okay, the federal courts, okay? Now, they have statutes for different things, and they have a reason, they have a purpose. For instance, USC Title II is controls Congress, what they can do, what they can't do. USC Title III controls the president. USC Title VII, agriculture. Title 14, Coast Guard. Title 17, copyright, education, food and drug, highway, hospitals, so on and so forth. You see, it's all the statutes, it's all about the controlling, ultimately, of people in government, government agencies, and the people that that exercise their work in those agencies. It controls them, sets up regulations, codes, and statutes. It also controls and sets up the rules, and we want this, for, interstate commerce, okay? And all of these powers, there's 18 powers we gave to Congress. You read about that in Article 1, Section 8, I believe. And there are 7 to 18 powers that we gave to Congress, one of those being to be able to write law on the 17. And if you go through that, you can see exactly what government has control over. And they have the ability to write law on those things. But it must be in adherence to common law. Of course, it's not. Some of it is. Well, a lot of it actually is, but some of it's not. Because a lot of this stuff was written, a lot of those codes were written earlier on. But it's the codes like USC 18 and 28 where they inserted the person into this. And, of course, they made us a corporation and they played a game under USC 26. It's just a game they play. It's all about fraud, and that's how you have to battle it. That's how you have to think about it. That's how you position your thoughts, your arguments, your ideas. It's all about the fact that this is fraud. And it's all about treason, okay? Because they're denying and they're destroying and polluting the Constitution. They're denying our unalienable rights that we've codified under 10 amendments, particularly. And so that's the attitude you have to have. You have to have a mindset and you have to understand principles. So if you go through the principles, and there are 8 principles that founded this country. They're ancient principles that are founded in the Bible. Jefferson is the one that put it together. And you can go look at the 8 principles in the comments,
okay.
And learn about that. We have it up on our website. I'm not sure exactly
what
stuff up there. I get confused.
I bought your book. And I've received that, so now it's time to dig in and get started. I'm hearing you say you recommend starting in common law then for under education.
Well, yeah, we have different levels of education, okay? We have court access in the common law. That's our most powerful course, and it'll teach you through the court system what due process is and how all that stuff works, okay?
Uh-huh.
At the court.
Yep.
Then there's other courses, there's foundation study, everybody should do that one, and that's just watching videos. There's quite a few videos of just kind of opening your eyes to things and revealing, the conspiracies and also revealing the common law. Then we have Constitutional Course 101, which is an introduction to the Constitution. It's a very simple course, but it's a beginner's course, and it's something to give you, a framework for your mind to think about as you do this. And we have a civics course. That's a real powerful course that reveals the conspiracy in a very, mostly a lot of the stuff, by the way. Government consent course. Then we have the free militia course and the jury administrative accredited course. So it depends on where you're at and what you want and what you're looking to get. But I really strongly believe, and I do believe we need to push this into the schools, every child as they go through school, maybe at the 8th grade level might be the appropriate time to teach this, but to teach them ultimately court access and the common law, how the court system works. By the time children in 8th grade, if they have a proper education, if they really, and most children don't, unfortunately, these days, but if they have proper education, by the time they're in the 8th grade, they can easily comprehend and work through this stuff. Easily, very easily.
Because
there's a lot of things, we're going to lay out a course of courses for the schools. People could do what they want. Let it be known to the people in the committees of safety. And as they pursue taking back their educational systems, taking back the schools, okay, and requiring certain things, you want to require civics, you want to require a constitutional course, you want to require court access, common law course, you want to require all this stuff, American history, real American history, the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington, the real Benjamin Franklin, okay? We're going to put these courses together and lay them out, and hopefully the people will realize the importance of our children learning these things. And
well, the Committee of Safety right now is the path that I'm looking to get more active in. So,
and hopefully they're connecting with us. We haven't got enough.
Yes.
Well, that's good, because some are not, and they're kind of running it off the hip, and they're really injuring themselves and not doing things in a proper way. I mean, you know, everything we laid out is laid out for the purpose, first of all, have an education and understanding of what you're doing, okay?
Yeah.
And coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. You're not coming in as the bully. You're not coming in with vengeance and anger. No, you're coming in with the law of justice, okay?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that they're following your program.
That's good. I appreciate it.
Yes, yes. And I would just like to be more knowledgeable to be able to be an active part. So,
well, many hands make light work, okay? And
exactly.
If enough people, if a good amount of people, let's say at least 5 or 10 people, and it doesn't even have to be that many, but, you know, 5 or 10 people are real nice, depending on how big your group is. But when you get to like 100, 200 people, you should have at least 5 or 10 people at bare minimum that have really gotten involved in some specialty of the courses that we've offered. You know, people really digging down deep and really want to be on the Judiciary Committee and really digging deep and understanding that and being an advisor of that within their own group. And or the political thing, we have a lot of handbooks on the political process, how it should operate, how it really works, how the committee man is set up, how people are put onto the ballot, all that stuff. Okay, well, that's on the political committee. You'll have people who are focusing on that. So when you get some people that are educating themselves in these different areas, again, many hands make light work, and you'd be advising each other and working through the system and growing in knowledge and control of our government.
Yeah, I believe they're really working hard to do all those things. So I think they're doing, from what I can, you know, what I witnessed tonight, what I participated in, and what I'm hearing from you, they're doing a great job, and they're working hard to get us going.
All right. What county are you in?
Macomb County.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that.
Okay, yeah, I think we're the second largest county, I believe, in Michigan, aside from Wayne County.
Okay.
Wayne County is the Detroit area. We're in the suburbs, Macomb County.
All right. We're going to take our next call. I appreciate the call.
Thank you for everything. I appreciate it, and you have a good rest of your night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take our next call. Let's see if this button doesn't seem to be working. I have to go through it. Okay, let's see. Robert from Texas, I think, is the next caller. Let me unmute you. Robert from Texas, you got it. You got the mic. Robert, Texas?
It looks like it's on mic.
His mic's unmuted, isn't it? I'm looking at it. It looks like it's unmuted.
No, it's not. It's muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted.
Okay, there you go.
Your callers are so eloquent tonight, and you are too. I've alerted like 6 people that I've been dealing with here to listen in. There's another guy from Tyler that is in the queue, and he is much more well-spoken, and he is much more victimized by the courts than you can imagine. $500,000 bond for disrupting a court. And so anyway, what you're doing is just such a blessing. And yesterday, Sunday afternoons at 3, I have a thing called Constitutional Christianity, and we go through a lot of this stuff. Not like you are going through it tonight. And I just have so much hope. And if I talk anymore, I'll just muck it up. And what you're saying is so timely. and I just feel so blessed. So I want to hang up and just say that and maybe let Lance speak.
All right, well, we appreciate that. And by the way, we also have Bible studies for anyone interested under Education Starts Here. We'll click on Bible studies. We've got lots of Bible studies. And we've got a live Bible study going on in the book of Matthew right now. But also, we have higher education here. There's a lot more in this underneath this education here. You know, we've got a lot of educational videos. We've got articles and essays. We've got American history, which we get into the founding documents, biographies. Also, we have the 5,000-year leap. We have that both in audio and in written form on a PDF by permission. We have the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. We got so much education up here. And we have a lot of the great works up here, too. So, you know, we have a lifetime of education, really. And, you know, your life should be education all the time. You should have a lifetime education, always learning something. You know? Okay.
You are such a blessing, and I just want to thank you again.
Okay, appreciate that, Robert. Okay, we'll take our next person, okay, in the queue. I guess I'm going to have to do this one at a time. Let me see if I can move this through in a different way. Okay, Robert. Okay, Robert. I don't know why. I just lost two people. You're going to want to get back into the queue. This button isn't working right. I'll take this wireless caller first. And two people were kicked out accidentally, so if you want to get back in. We'll take a wireless caller coming in from 410 area code. You got the mic.
Hi, this is Greg from Maryland.
Greg from Maryland. Go right ahead, Greg.
Yes. I purchased the Government by Consent book and sent an email to the sheriff in Baltimore County, Maryland. Did not get a response. So I went to the courthouse and met with a deputy sheriff. He sent me to the front window. And I left a message who I am and that I had a book and I wanted to present it to the sheriff, but I haven't heard from him and it's been about 3 weeks. What do you suggest as the next move?
Go find someone to run for sheriff. I have never heard of the sheriff not responding. And maybe that happens from time to time, but basically I know with us, we called down to the sheriff, we wanted to make and made an appointment to meet with him. And that's what we said in the handbook, is to call down to the sheriff's office, make an appointment to meet with the sheriff. You want to do your paperwork, you know, want to get your resolution together and, you know. Well, and let me open up a page here coming under Start a Committee of Safety. We've got the handbooks and videos and tools here, everything you need and to really work through your committees of safety. But you want to make sure you have a charter. You make sure, and by the way, this charter and the resolution is, you know, it was written quite some time ago. I'm going to go up and update these two papers because I see a few things that we've really changed our thinking on a little bit as time went on. But I'm going to update them. But you need your charter, you need your resolution, okay? You need your seal, and once you put all that together and have it bound, and bring that with the copy of the book, Government by Consent, that's when you, sheriff, you keep it short, 5-10 minutes. Tell them that's all you want. I want to just get to. We just want to get together, discuss a few things. Like to get 10 minutes of your time. That's what you want to ask for. And then once you leave, you give them all the stuff, and you're introducing yourself, who you are. We formed a committee of safety in this county, and we're a group of concerned citizens. You can use that word, and the resolution and the. The charter and the resolution should really express what you're doing and who you are and how lawful and legal you're doing it. And then you say, we'd like you to come down and we'd like to talk to you, you know, at one of our meetings, maybe 6 weeks down the road or 4 weeks down the road, depending on how much time you think you need to do that. You know, we'd like to talk to you and And that's it. So now you've given them like 4 to 6 or 8 weeks to read through all of your paperwork and to at least read through good parts of the book. There's a whole chapter on sheriffs. That should interest them because it's an empowering chapter. It empowers the sheriff. And if the sheriff is responsive, you've got to look to get a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, and I really don't have a feeling for, you know, where the sheriff is coming from.
Well, I'll tell you, you can get rid of him very, very easy to get rid of the sheriff, okay? And you could do it within 90 days if you have enough people working with you. Because you need to get signatures. And you have to, have him removed from office, okay? And we teach that also. We got all the paperwork for that up here for a recall. So right here is a recall petition, okay? So you want to do a recall petition on the sheriff. You have to get a certain number of percentage of whatever voting that took place. Okay, there's a percentage. And we have a book up there, and the government puts out a book on these this type of information. Hold on a minute. They have to put out a book when the election time comes around, how many signatures you need for this, and, you know, and it's a percentage. So how many people in your county, do you know, roughly?
854,000. I registered.
Decent size.
Yeah.
854,000. Okay, so in your county, it could be maybe, I would think maybe at least 300,000 people voting in that county, I would imagine. Sometimes less off elections. Like a lot of people only come out and vote on the fourth year elections. You know, when governor's running or when president's running or something like that. And so there'll be less people. But the point is as many votes that went for the sheriff, you know, that were cast. You have to get a percentage of that. It might be 5% or something like that. But there's a book that the Board of Election puts out. You can go down and get that book, which gives you all the information on running petitions and so on and so forth, how many signatures you need for this or that or the other thing. But for recall, it'd probably be 5%.
Now, well, that's an adversarial
if you have 20,
position, you know. And that would be an adversarial position, and I would rather, you know, get along with the guy. And
well, if he doesn't respond to you, then there's no sense of having him there. Look, if you can't even get to meet the guy, so you should try again. And if you do meet the guy and he doesn't respond and he doesn't look at you read the book and look at the literature, which he should because he doesn't even understand the law of the land. He has to go to his county attorney to get information on law, okay?
He doesn't need to understand. They probably just make it up as they go along.
Yeah, well, the lawyers do anyway and the judges. But the thing is, though, if he's not going to respond at all to the people, then why even have him in office? And just do a recall. And then they'll run a special election to replace him. Okay?
Yeah.
And maybe you find somebody during that process that would want to run for, that has the credentials to run for a sheriff and would want to run for the sheriff to support him.
John, I recall registering my name to get involved in the Committee of Safety. Maybe we could take this offline and I could call in. We could see how many people you actually have registered in Maryland and perhaps
if you come to our directory and click on our directory, okay, you can come down to Maryland. Let's see, Maryland, right here. In Maryland, we have 193 members. You got 24 counties. All 24 has been constituted. We have Baltimore County and I guess Baltimore City. Is that two different committees of safety, I guess?
Baltimore County wraps around Baltimore City.
Now, if you send a email to Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org and ask him to drop you a list of the members for you know, Maryland, he'll send them out to you. You won't get emails. We don't believe in email communications. It just annoys people.
Right.
So this is face-to-face stuff. This is, we got to get involved face-to-face. And so we give you the phone numbers. We'll give you the counties they're in, first name, counties they're in, and their phone numbers.
Okay, very good. I'll do that.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we'll take our next caller. Thanks, Robert. Let's see. It's Grant from, looks like, Maryland also, MD. Grant, you got the mic.
Yeah, that was me. We just finished.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Let me mute you then. Sean, last caller in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, well, it's coming to late, coming up to 11 now. We'll take Sean. Sean, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you in?
Hi, John. I'm from California, and I've spoken to you a couple times previously with my ongoing traffic saga. I did post or send a question by email, but I was late getting onto the call tonight, so I don't know if you responded at the beginning of the video within like the first 40 minutes.
Which was the question? Which question was it?
It was regarding the judge scheduling me for a, quote, statutory trial and me wanting to get your take on what that means.
Oh,
and
okay,
how
We didn't understand. Do you use the word commissioner or something?
He's a commissioner. He's not a judge. Yeah, he's a commissioner.
Okay, well, that means he's a magistrate. You know, look, at in their statutes, they give magistrates the power to put people in jail for 6 months. That's an impossibility.
Okay.
A judge can't even put you in jail for 6 months. And
yet,
because under common law, the only one that can put you in jail is the people themselves, and they have to do an indictment first, and then they have to get a jury of your peers, and that's the only way. Only way.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they do what they want. But we did respond to that. What you want to do is listen to tonight's program. You can go to two places you can find that. One is under the Monday Night Call. You come down, you'll see the audio there. It's an MP3. Or you can come to today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forums. And I usually post this right after the program, so it'll be posted tonight, so you can watch the video too. But we did get into the details of the question.
Okay, and since I won't be able to view it until later, did you also touch on my question about do you have any idea what he might be referring to as far as my documents being out of order?
Well, I don't know what he means, but if you follow the did you challenge the jurisdiction?
Yes, I filed all of those papers that you have that you
And everything is in common law order.
Yeah, he told me I couldn't appear by special appearance because I was physically there. He just poo-pooed everything.
Well, because he doesn't understand the law. He doesn't even understand his own law. Forget about the common law. You know, you're going to have to move this to another court. You're going to have to move it to state court for the cause of denial of due process. And what you're doing is you're challenging. Actually, you're not going for denial of due process. When you move it to the state court, you're challenging the jurisdiction. And if you filed it the way that I told you to file it out, they can't use their statutes against you. That would require that you come in by special appearance. But, you know, once you discover that the court doesn't have jurisdiction over you, you can challenge that any time. Under common law, you can challenge that any time throughout the case. It doesn't have to be in the beginning, but it's the way to do it is in the beginning.
Okay. I did everything the way you instructed, and he refused to accept my paperwork, so I mailed it in by certified mail per your next recommendation. He told me he absolutely has jurisdiction over me because I was in his courtroom, and they returned my documents via certified mail.
That's a crime. I laid that out also. That is a crime. They removed papers that were filed. So.
Yeah. So he rescheduled me to return at the end of July. So I'm just trying to really educate myself and prepare myself.
Move in quickly. Move in this month to to serve them, just so that they get to the point that they don't trust you, and next thing you know, you're in two courts at the same time, and you're trying to get this one to shut that one down. So don't wait too long to move it into the court. The only way, now you challenge jurisdiction, he ignored it, and he's not going, and he doesn't have the authority to rule on it because he's not going to rule on it. Well, he is going to rule on it, but he's going to rule in his own favor because he believes he has the jurisdiction. But the key thing, when you challenge jurisdiction, if a judge does rule on it and say, I got the jurisdiction, well, then the question has to be, how did you rule on it? Because a judge can only rule on what's before it. Can't rule on anything outside. It has to rule on what's before it and proceed according to the law. So if he has to proceed with what's before him, you have an affidavit before him that lays out the fact that he does not have jurisdiction. And it's unrebutted, so therefore that's the law of that case, and you win, and that's it. Now, he's not going to rule that way. He's going to deny that. Mm-hmm. Again, probably of ignorance. If he's you called him a commissioner or something?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, then he probably doesn't even have any law. The only law back he has is probably law school, judge school.
Yeah, he's a lawyer. He's an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the worst thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But he says repeatedly that I'm giving terrible advice. He kicked me out of the courtroom last time, actually. He had me on Zoom, and he muted me and then kicked me off of the platform.
Yeah, I remember it said that he wants you in, he doesn't want you to come back in on Zoom, he wants you there.
Yeah.
What kind of a court case is this? Is traffic violation or what is it?
A speeding ticket going 10 miles over, and both times that I've appeared, the officer is not there, and I have asked him to...
Oh, well, that's it, case over.
Yeah, but he won't do it because I won't plea.
Well, he may have a point there. Let me think about this a minute.
He
doesn't show up, there's no reason to plea.
Yeah. And that's what I said. And I sat there and watched case after case before me get dismissed because the officers weren't there. And I said, excuse me, what's the difference in my case? Why aren't you dismissing my case? I'm moving to dismiss because my accuser is not here. And he said, because they entered a plea and you haven't. If you want to enter a plea, I'll give you a chance to enter a plea. And I said, no.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of tricky. So, look, you got another point here that you can raise. But, just so you understand, to move it to state court, they're going to charge you money. Okay? Here in New York, it's $310. Let me think about this. I think it's $310. Yeah, I think it's $310. But they break it up in two different ways. First of all, you apply for what's called an index number, which is the court case number. Mm-hmm. Okay? And here in New York, that's $210. And then there's what's called the RJI, Request for Judicial Intervention. I call it Request for Judicial Interference. But in any event, I never fill that one out. The other side always gets angry with me because in order for them to go talk to the judge, they got to go pay the $95, because I'm not going to file for it. I don't want the interference. Mm-hmm. And so it's set up that way in New York, which I think is the proper way to set it up because there may not be a need to have a judge in the game yet, okay, mm-hmm. which we don't need a judge anyway because we're under the law. But we may want a judge if it's a civil thing and we're happy, we'd let the judge make a decision. If we had just judges, that would be good, but we don't have just judges, so I wouldn't do that. But the bottom line, though, is when you file that here in New York, when you file for the index number, what happens is that's a time of going back and forth, having a conversation. You write papers, they respond. You respond, they respond. You start to go through discovery. You don't need a judge for any of that. And then you do this and you do that. At some point, as you're going through that, one side may realize, hey, I'm going to lose. Let me make a deal. Okay? Because that's what it's really all about. And that's the way it really should work. A lot of cases shouldn't even go into court because it's settled by the two parties themselves as they're making their argument and putting on paper. And they'll come to realize, I'm not going to win. Okay? And then you don't even have to go to court. Your case is settled because you settle it between the two people. Now, if you have a problem and they're refusing to do the right thing, responding to your paperwork or whatever the case may be, it's like for discovery or something, then at that point you're going to need a judge to pull in for a summary judgment. Now, and again, the only time you pull a judge in for a summary judgment is you're expecting them to rule for you, okay? So
right.
That you do. Not that they're going to. That's another problem. But the other thing is you can get to the point is you can file for a summary judgment at some point when you know you have enough proof and on paper. Usually, generally, you're going to need a judge involved with that. But if it is a default, if they defaulted, you don't have to do anything. You can go right to the clerk and file an affidavit of default and then get your paper signed by any judge at that point or any magistrate to sign the papers once it's filed for the order for the sheriff. You write the paper up for order the sheriff to go seize X amount of dollars or whatever it is that you were looking to seize from the case. And any magistrate, they're obligated to sign it. You know, they're just looking at the paperwork, make sure there's an affidavit of default, everything was done right, that it was clear, your wherefore clause was clear enough that there's no conflict of meaning of what you mean in it. And it's clean. You know, it's just clean. Okay, here, got my signature, go. And that's it. And I've done this already. I've taken it to the sheriff, and the sheriff went and seized the monies. And I've done this without, I only done it once because there only had one case that ended this way where they didn't respond. And that was it, and never went to the judge or anything other than for a signature. And I could have went to any magistrate, didn't have to be a judge.
Okay. Well, I'll watch the beginning of the video from today about the statutory part. Thank you.
Yeah, you also, we probably spoke before and told you about the videos we've done, I think it was April 1st and April 29th, which I mentioned tonight anyway.
Yeah, I have watched the earlier videos, yep.
And we also have another paper that I put up. You can find that under Education Starts Here. Come down to Law, come over to Court Forms Process, and then you come down to where the paperwork was that you used, which was instructions and forms for traffic court. And I moved, I put a new one in here called Move to State Court Redacted. I'm going to get rid of the word redacted. I don't need that in there. Move to State Court. Next week I'll probably review through that paper. It's only 4 pages, so.
Okay.
But that's exactly how you move to a state court with that paper. Okay.
Okay.
And my wherefore clause looked for a cease and desist, and for them to refund me any money that I spent and any damages that might occur if they continue to pursue me while I'm in court. Any damages that come upon me, they're going to have to pay for it. But I didn't chase them for money. I usually go to $1,000 for every violation of any unalienable right by each individual involved, prosecuted, whatever, that kind of thing. And that's in real money, $1,000 in real money, which right now I understand gold is up there to what, silver I think is up to $30, $35 an ounce or something. Does anybody know? I think it's up around $35. So if it's up at 30 bucks, okay, so, you know, 35, that's $35,000, every $1,000 real money, you know.
Wow.
But I'm not, you know, looking in these cases, you know, I'm not chasing the money. I'm just chasing the win and the cease and desist, you know.
To educate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we're done. I know some other people came into the queue since, but we've come to the end of our program. It's a couple of minutes after 11, and we do try to end at 11. But we'll be back next Monday. Anybody has any more questions and comments, try to get into the queue early, those who are in the queue now, and we'll take your calls. Thanks, everyone, for coming. God bless. See you next Monday, hopefully. And bring friends. Let's get people involved. Let's build our committees of safety. Good night, everybody.